Welcome to This Week in Lotus. The weekly roundtable discussion of all things social, collaboration, technology and community. Here's your host, Stuart McIntyre.
This Week in Lotus, episode 49 for Tuesday, May 3rd, 2011. It's all about the stickiness. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. You can find this and other tech-related podcasts at techpodcast.com.
This Week in Lotus is sponsored by Audible, the destination for the widest selection of digital audiobooks available worldwide. Want to be well-read like Duffer, but just can't spare the time to read books on paper? Take an audiobook on your commute or whilst walking instead. We've got a special offer for you. Download and listen to a best-selling book every month for just $7.49 a month for the first 3 months, and you can cancel at any time. Pick from over 85,000 audiobooks from business to classics to sci-fi or comedy. Go to thisweekinlotus.com/audible for all the details. Hello and welcome to episode 49 of This Week in Lotus. I'm Stuart McIntyre. We're back for another week of roundtable discussion about Lotus software, IBM Collaboration Solutions, and anything else that's in that kind of area. So I'm joined, as usual, by Darren Duke. Hi there, Darren.
Mr. Stuart McIntyre, hello.
Hello. How's your week been?
It seems short, but it always seems short when we kind of a bit lackadaisical on the posting. It always seems like, oh, Twills just came out. Oh, we've got to record another Twill. So it always kind of screws me up a bit. I forgot it was Thursday until Lisa kicked me this morning.
It did make me laugh. Last week you said about how you kind of fudged your way through production and how you're looking forward to me being back. And then I completely messed up choosing the wrong microphone when we were recording last week. So sorry about the poor quality last week. Hopefully the discussion made up for it.
So which microphone are you using today?
I'm back on the snowball again today, so it's loud and clear. Did I hear that you got tornadoes round your way?
We did. Luckily, they all missed Atlanta, the greater Atlanta area, which is a pretty big area, but just to the west of us, probably 2 hours, Birmingham, Alabama, and then Tuscaloosa got pretty hit. There was a mile-wide tornado went through Tuscaloosa last night, at rush hour as well, which is always a bad time.
Okay.
So our thoughts are with all of our customers who live in the Alabama and Mississippi regions and in Tennessee as well.
Absolutely. Just sounds horrific what went on there. So hope everybody is okay that listens to this podcast normally. Of course, over here in the UK, we're snowed under with news about the royal wedding tomorrow. It's the big event over here. We're going up to London to watch what we can of it. So it should be exciting.
It is. I think Lisa is actually getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning to watch it over here. I have absolutely no interest. I had no interest in 1981. The last thing I can remember is 1977. I'm sure my age now. I was probably like 5 or 6, and that was the Queen's 25th coronation, I think, maybe.
Yeah, that's right.
So, and I vividly remember the street parties, but that's probably the last of the big street parties I remember. But yeah, the Americans, you know, for spending, you know, 6 years trying to kick us out, they really get into the royal weddings.
Yeah, they do. Something like twice as many American journalists as British journalists are covering it in London this week. So, yeah, amazing coverage. But I'll report back on it next week and let you know how it went from our perspective. We're joined, as usual, by some experts from around the Lotus community for this podcast. Joined, first of all, by Eileen Fitzgerald. Hi there, Eileen.
Hi, Stuart. How are you?
Yeah, really good. Thank you. Thanks for taking time out to join us this week. Do you want to tell us who you work for and what you do there, Eileen?
Definitely. And thanks for having me on the show. I really enjoy the show. My name is Eileen Fitzgerald. I'm in charge of customer service delivery and product management for GSX. We produce products which help you monitor, manage the various disparate components of your collaboration portfolio. We also provide a reporting tool on that. I'm going to put in a plug because we've got V10 coming out very, very shortly and we're really excited by that.
Oh, congratulations.
So, No, well, if I make it to the end to the launch.
You have to tell us
So,
about that a bit later on. We'll be asking you more about your products then, so you have to fill us
definitely.
in. You're also involved in some of the user groups as well, aren't you? Particularly iLug, but are you involved in UK Lug as
Yeah,
well?
definitely. Myself and there's a huge crowd of us, as you all know. You're well familiar with Warren and Paul and Kitty. I can't, there are too many to name. We do iLug and we do UK Lug. So we've got UK Lug coming up now at the end of May up in Manchester. And again, we're really looking forward to it. We have a lot of business partners, some fantastic speakers. You're heading up yourself, Stuart, aren't you?
I am indeed, yeah, speaking at the
Excellent. And John, you're one of the sponsors as well, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Oh,
Looking forward to it.
and you haven't been introduced yet. And GSX is a sponsor as well, so we're really looking forward to that now. There's a lot of people attending as well. So it's going to be a great event. Warren and Kitty are the main runners on that one. This year we toss it back and forth between UK Lug and iLug.
Yeah, really looking forward to it. I think it's 23rd and 24th of May, so coming up soon. And of course, that mellifluous voice we just heard belongs to another member of the panel. Sorry about that. It's John DiGiorgio. Hi there, John.
Hi there, everyone. Good to
Hello.
be here with you.
Yeah, it's great to have you on this week. So, do you want to tell us about your company, your products, and what you do there?
Right. Well, I'm the CEO of Integra for Notes, and our Integra for Notes family of products help people take data out of notes and principally push it to Excel, Word, and Symfony. And people usually use our products to improve the presentation of notes data, reporting, improve analysis, and charting of notes data. So that's what we do, and we've got solutions both for developers to define what we refer to as predefined reports, which are reports for a known business process, as well as our Integra Quick Reports product, which allows end users to generate ad hoc reports on their own. So essentially without having to revert back to Domino developers. So that's what we do.
Excellent. And I've seen you around at Lotusspheres and other user events over the last few years. How long have you been working with Lotus Notes?
Since 1993. So I think this year was Lotusphere number 15 for me personally, and we've exhibited our Integra for Notes product there for the last 10 years.
Excellent. And you're based in Malta, is that right?
That's correct.
What a wonderful place to be. I guess you
Yes.
get out and do plenty of sailing and that kind of thing.
That's absolutely right. Yes, that's my passion. So it's a lovely place to live to be able to do that from.
Oh, wonderful. Well, thanks for taking time out to join us on the podcast today. It's great to have you both on board.
Most welcome.
Well, the focus for this week's episode really is around ISVs. Both your companies are ISVs. I've spoken to a number of folks in that kind of area, the community, over the 49 or so episodes of This Week in Lotus. I'm fascinated to find out a little bit more about how you kind of got into, or your companies got into, being an ISV for IBM Lotus. So, Eileen, do you want to kick us off? What's the background of GSX? I mean, are you solely an IBM Lotus partner, or do you have solutions for other people's products as well?
Yeah, sure. No, we're not solely IBM. We started off, that's our principal, that's where we started, and that's where the majority of our customers are focused in. The company's about 15 years old at this stage, and it originally started off as a one-product company with monitoring solutions for Lotus Domino. Then we expanded into the other facets, for example, Sametime, and then BlackBerry. We're BlackRim business partner as well. And then we added Exchange as well. So we're also a Microsoft business partner. What we look at is the collaboration portfolio, so the various different components. But I mentioned there that V10 is coming out shortly, which will also include Traveler and Quicker. So it's predominantly the Domino, but also if you have other components such as Exchange, SharePoint, RIM, BlackBerry monitoring, you can chop and change. So that's how we got into that. We started off as a Lotus, but we work mainly with those three businesses.
Okay, so it sounds like Lotus is still pretty much the core of your business, but
exactly.
You also have solutions.
Yeah.
So, that's in terms of products. In terms of sales, I'm not looking for a detailed breakdown, but you would still see IBM as being a real core partner of your business.
Exactly. IBM is our core partner. It's where the basis of all of our customers are. The vast majority of our customers would be IBM and Domino customers, predominantly, and also in terms of the range of products that we support. For example, we get Sameton, we've got Quikr, Domino, Traveler. That is most of our product focus, and that is our primary marketplace.
Excellent. And John, I mean, what's the situation for you? How did you get into being an IBM partner, and is it still the core of your business working with IBM?
No, we've got a slightly different story to Eileen's. The notes and whole collaboration space of our business is actually about 10% of what we do as a business. So we started doing other things. We brought notes into the business back in 1993. But we're a 27-year-old company, so we were doing lots of stuff before. And the side of our business, which is the non-notes or the non-collaboration side, has continued to be our main focus and is also currently growing at even higher rates than the notes side of the business. I'm pleased to say that the notes side of the business is growing and growing well, but the rest of what we do is growing even more rapidly. And what we do as our core within our business is we develop solutions for the retail, finance, and inventory side of businesses, mainly for the SMB market. And we also have a specialism in developing solutions for the freight industry. And obviously, those are not on the Notes and Domino platform. That's typically a .NET SQL type of environment. That is really the core of what we do. We always branded Integra distinct from the rest of what we do as a company. In fact, the company that owns Integra is called Sherbin Software. We've always intentionally branded Integra as a separate part, basically to build a brand independently of what we do within the rest of the business. So that's where we stand in that area, and we got into the notes and domino field mainly because we were reselling Lotus software, which we started doing back in 1990, and I recall seeing a presentation of Lotus Notes in April of 1993. I can distinctly remember when that was. As soon as I saw the product, I realized that a big project that we just completed for a customer here in Malta was really made obsolete by what we were seeing the capabilities of Notes and Domino brought. And in fact, what we did was a few years later, we actually redeveloped that same application for that customer as a Notes application. And they've been using that since then. So that's sort of how we got into the Notes and Domino space.
Go on, Arlene.
I just wanted to add on to that because we're talking about the word growth. And again, just to reiterate, because I made a point about how we're adding in new modules for support for Traveler, for Quikr, for Sametime 8.5. And also the growth area. There's an awful lot of negativity out there at the moment in terms of growth opportunities. And I'm seeing with our customers, and again, we put in a huge investment into expanding our product range in the Domino, the IBM, the Domino portfolio, collaboration portfolio, in terms of enhancing existing products. And also we're launching new products into that area. And from a customer's perspective, there seems to be a huge amount of interest in actually expanding the tool set that they use. There's a very strong entrenched, as you stated earlier on, Stuart, are the majority of our customers, our core marketplace, our original marketplace, are our Domino customers. and they seem firmly entrenched in that area and are actively interested in new products in this area. Now, here's hoping all of the interest actually does convert into growth, but at the moment there seems to be a lot of interest and positive feedback regarding the future and the direction. So I just thought I'd throw that in there in terms of the investment into the market and also the investment in the continued growth areas and opportunities.
Now I have a question for John, and that was, you mentioned the word SMB, and it always kind of makes me smirk when I hear IBM say that, because I think they have a different idea of what SMB means to literally everybody else on the planet.
Absolutely.
So what would your definition of what you term an SMB be?
Well, I agree with you 100% in terms of the IBM definition is not a very useful one for us. When you're based in a place like Malta, of course, the term SMB takes on an even more restricted interpretation, in the sense that we would consider someone here with 100 users and upwards as actually being beyond SMB. That's because of the nature of our market here. So we would typically look at the SMB market as being probably an organization with up to 100 people in terms of using the technology. That's the sort of level that we go in at.
And the other thing I want to mention about Integra is, I was actually on a call a couple of days ago with a customer of mine, and we're talking about it, and he mentioned he was blown away by the value that you guys provide as a price point. So congratulations on that.
Thanks. Good to hear that, always.
How does that work, being based in Malta, John? Does that make a difference in terms of how you deal with your customers, how you find your customers?
How we deal with our customers, I would say no. In the sense that we're very, very well located. We have customers globally, so literally from sort of New Zealand all the way to West Coast, US and Canada. We actually serve 19 time zones, and we're very well placed here because we're exactly in the middle of the 19 time zones. So
it was planned. That's why you live in Malta.
Absolutely. Nothing to do with the sailing. So we literally are halfway across our customer base. Although, of course, most of our customers are in North America, it's actually quite reasonable to be able to service a customer with a 6 or 9 hour difference. And, of course, because the distribution of Notes customers seems to be disproportionately based on the East Coast more than the West Coast, we're actually dealing with a greater number of customers within a 6 hour time frame. So it's quite manageable from that perspective. And of course, the technology that we have available to us, as we're using today, makes the whole process a lot easier. In terms of finding our customers or interacting with our customers, it is a bit more difficult, I have to say, in the sense that turning up at events like, you know, we were at BLUG, a very successful event run in Belgium last month, where Eileen and I last mm-hmm. met. Obviously, we're in UK LUG in May. And our attendance at these events tends to be a bit more difficult, in the sense that most people just get into a car and drive to an event. We always have to fly to places, so it does make our costs a bit more difficult. But Malta is very well located and very well connected in terms of flights and availability. So it's pretty much just as easy for us to get anywhere. Once you have to get onto a plane, as Eileen knows, she seems to live on planes. Once you have to get onto a plane, whether it's a 2 hour flight or a 3 hour flight, doesn't actually make any difference.
Yeah, it doesn't.
You're spending more time at the airports rather than the trip itself.
Yeah. I had somebody the other day said to me, it was a difference between a 3 hour flight or a 7 hour flight. And my comment was, that makes absolutely no difference whatsoever. Because once you're on the plane, you're on the plane.
So you lose a day either way.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And how about you, Eileen? You're obviously based in Ireland. Where are the rest of GSX and how do you work with them?
We have our head offices in Geneva. We have the development offices in Nice, and we have our US offices in Buffalo, New York. So, as John said, I do spend a huge. If I'm tend to be supposed to be 50%, but with the run up to the product launch, I've been doing a huge amount of travel this year. So I spend about a week a month in Nice with the development team, and obviously we have our meetings with quarterly management meetings, and also spend some time in the US. So, and again, it's technology. Now, once you have your laptop and once you have a headset, I can take calls, and I've done it WebExes, screen shares, same times with customers anywhere, and time zone differences.
And I am seeing a common denominator here, and that is all of the ISVs seem to live on the Mediterranean. I think me and Stu are in the wrong business.
We got it wrong, haven't we?
The best kept secret.
Yeah, I'm still trying to work out how I can work out to do a business trip to see John in Malta.
Well, we did meet in the south of France last summer.
That's true.
Both I and myself were there at the same time, so
yeah.
We do meet up. Actually, yeah. That's one of the great things about our community, which I don't know about anyone else, but certainly the other communities we form a part of haven't got anything like this. But the camaraderie and friendship that one finds in this community is something which is really extraordinary. And sort of we look out for each other beyond our business contacts when we're on our travels. And that's a lovely thing to see.
Yeah, I agree, actually. There is, because I've been in this community now for many more years than I care to actually mention. And we've made some great friends in it. And definitely the community, there is a very big social and friendly aspect. Everybody does look out for everybody else. So that's a very good side to it. Yeah.
Actually, I wanted to add something on that, Stuart, if I can pick you up on a blog post that I read of yours post Lotusphere. Which was a very interesting one, and you were mentioning this sort of community and how perhaps IBM doesn't understand the full extent to which it is actually a community. That was a point that you had mentioned in your blog post after Lotusphere. I'm not convinced. Maybe when we get into the whole IBM and ISV side, we can discuss this further. But you know, there were some things that you were mentioning in your blog post as stuff that didn't matter, or you know, sort of the conversations are being moved on from messaging, et cetera, et cetera. It'd be interesting to pick up that discussion point when we talk about the whole ISV side of things.
Okay, well, I mean, let's move on to that now, John, and thanks for mentioning my post. You guys have both been around the community for a long while. Darren and I have as well. And it feels like we're going through a little bit of a transition point between, you know, us having the name and the brand Lotus that we all kind of associate ourselves to, it being more of an IBM brand thing. We also seem to be moving a little bit from it being a messaging and collaboration and application development conversation to it being more of a social business conversation. So we're kind of in a transient period. How does that map out to your own both experience today with your products and selling them to your customers, and also how you plan for the future? Arlene, do you want to pick that up as a tools vendor? How do you kind of see this mapping out as you move towards other areas of the Lotus portfolio?
It's actually interesting. I'm just wondering whether I've been in, I won't go into how many years, but I've noticed that I actually had this conversation with somebody earlier on today. Is social business, what is the difference between a collaboration platform and a social business platform? Is it the terminology, or is there an actual key differentiation between them? In terms of, if you take it, just to get back to John's conversation there, in terms of the community, I've noticed a big difference in the past 2 years, and maybe it's because it's only been in the 2 years I've actually been in the business partner side, whereas before that I was managing the platform in a company. That this year at Lotusphere, there was huge focus on the ISVs. There was the product managers were very, very accessible. There was a lot of support from senior people in IBM for getting access to resources within IBM to help evolve the product line. And also there's a new strategy set up with Joyce Davis and Mary Beth Raven in terms of utilizing the community for business purposes in a social business and social interaction way. So I think that those initiatives are actually very, very exciting, especially with the focus. I sound like a bit of a fangirl here. But, you know, it's like, we need to be the fanboy. But fan person, there we go, politically correct. I'm a fan person. I'm really interested to see, because I think both Joyce and Mary Beth Raven are incredibly enthusiastic and giving to the community. Absolutely. So I'm really interested to see what comes out of that, and also really interested in catching up with them at UKLOG to actually sit down and have a conversation about that. So in terms of the platform, we wouldn't be in business if customers didn't view their collaboration platforms as business critical, i.e. monitoring the availability, the reporting aspect, et cetera, et cetera. And we're seeing a huge interest in, again, the same time, the quicker, more and more demands on availability, being able to monitor availability. And you mentioned earlier on to me ITIL, in terms of the focus on ensuring that not just that the server's up and running, but the quality of service it's delivering. Because collaboration platforms are different in that it's response times, service availability, ease of use. All of these are critically important to the success of the platform. So yeah, we're seeing big demands in that as well. So it's a bit of a convoluted answer, but I hope that responds to your question.
It does indeed. And when you speak to customers, do you see kind of the traditional and the new products, you know, say let's take Notes and Domino and Connections, do you think customers see those as part of the same portfolio with the same kind of DNA embedded in them, so they just see it as managing their collaboration infrastructure, or do you see customers dealing with them in a different way or thinking about them differently in terms of their requirements for managing those platforms?
Differently from what?
Well, I'm
previously or from other applications?
Well, say they've had Notes and Domino for, you know, 10, 20 years in their organization, and they're now rolling out Connections or Quicker or, you know, or some of those, you know, same time 85, for example. It's easy to think of them as being, you know, Domino NSF and WebSphere based and kind of separate them in that way. Do you see customers thinking of them very differently, or do you just see customers coming to you saying, we need to manage our Lotus, you know, infrastructure? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can you make that easier for me?
I see a difference. In terms of, there's two levels of difference. One is in terms of how people view operations and operational management, and two is how they view operational management of collaboration platforms. So the difference I've seen, both from being internal in organizations and also now being external to organizations, if you like, in operational management, is that there's much bigger realization on having control of the environment in terms of variancing between availability and service availability, which is an ITIL concept, but it's really, really expanding an awful lot in terms of, again, it's not enough to know that your server's up and running, but is it delivering the service to the business that it's supposed to? So I see a lot of operation managers are struggling with the conflicting demands of that in terms of, it's not just black and white, okay, my server was available by, you know, it was up 24 hours last week. This is what is expected of me. Yes, but mail routing wasn't working. So you have to dig deeper and you have to identify what are the services that you're expected to deliver. And then you have to be able to monitor and report on those services. So that's the difference I see from an operational perspective in terms of they need more justification in the quality of service delivery to the business, not just black and white hardware metrics. And secondly, then, in terms of the collaboration platform, there are additional complexities associated with that versus a traditional application, because a traditional application has a set of functions that it performs. So if you've got a business, a CRM application, it has a limited set of functions that it performs. So once you take it out, there's only so much you can actually, you know, there are only so many different ways you can use the product. Whereas with collaboration tools, that by nature, they're designed to be flexible to meet the collaboration requirements of the organization. And end users can be terribly, terribly inventive in how they use these tools to meet their business requirements. So operations people are also struggling in the collaboration environment to know what's going on in their environment and how people are using tools. And has somebody set up a mailing list that will email a 100 meg spreadsheet to 500 people once a day?
Sorry, know? I won't do that again. Sorry.
You know? I mean, I think that's the one classic example we can all actually relate to in terms of how, you know, it's and again, it's very basic, okay? It's like monitoring your disk space, getting alerts that your disk space is suddenly gone and your system's about to crash. And this, so tying the two of them together, and then I'll stop because this is one of the things, my keys, is differentiating between SLAs and KPIs. For example, your SLA is that your server is available, but a server never crashed with the root cause. The root cause was the server wasn't available. It ran out of disk space or it ran out of CPU. So I see operation managers are very much coming to the realization that it's not enough to just react to a broken SLA. They have to track the KPIs that could impact on those, that SLA, and track those.
I agree. I ask a lot of people, what's your alerting system? And their answer is, my users. It's like, really? And you wonder why people significantly dislike you.
Oh, Darren, send them my way. I'll have a chat with them.
I think you made some really interesting points there, Eileen, in terms of sort of, you know, far greater kind of granularity of management and also focusing on actually what the tools do for the users and monitoring and managing that versus just them treating them as IT operations sort of aspects. So that's a really good conversation. And John, over to you in terms of, you know, this kind of transition between, you know, traditional and social business type topics. How do you see that playing out for you? Have you got any kind of focus on where IBM's going with social business, or for you and Integra for Notes, is it just all about the Domino Notes platform for now?
No, as far as Integra for Notes is concerned specifically, it is a Notes-focused product, and that is where our core focus is with the product. I you know, was interested to hear Eileen talking about social business. Is it just terminology? Is there a difference between collaboration, social business, et cetera, et cetera? And clearly there are some very specific differences. But the problem we've always had, both as a community and as IBM, is actually being able to very, very clearly bring across the positioning and the value of our offering. I think if you look at Notes and Dominoes specifically, it's a great story in terms of a negative story, unfortunately, of our ability in total, both the IBM side and the community, to actually really bring the whole value of what Notes and Domino has been able to bring to people in its lifespan. And in fact, this really brings me back to the point I was making about your blog post, which I do, by the way, recommend that you relink to the notes of this discussion, because I think it's useful for people to read it. But you were looking at some of the bare facts, and if I can just read some of it very, very, there were three bullet points where he said, you know, whether the Lotus Notes and brand name and brand exist in 5 years doesn't matter. Whether the portal is or isn't an exceptional web experience doesn't matter. Whether IBM advertises product or not doesn't matter. Then in bold, you wrote, the only thing that should matter is whether IBM technologies can do a valuable job for our organizations or for our customers. And right now, that's a resounding yes. Mm-hmm. Whereas I agree with you, yes, it is a resounding yes. There definitely is the value there. I'm not sure whether I would agree, I'm actually pretty sure that I don't agree, actually, that the only thing that should matter is whether the technologies provide a valuable job. Because really, the credibility of the environment is also extremely important because customers of IBM and thus customers of ours as ISVs need to have a credible belief that the platform is going where it really is going, does offer the value that it really does offer. And I think this is where perhaps in recent years we've lost a bit of traction in the sense the whole credibility of the platform has been attacked very successfully by the competition. I would also say very unfairly by the competition.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
And that's really a very important side. What the product actually does, the product set in the broad sense, is able to bring to the party is obviously crucial, but there needs to be that whole credibility. And I think that's where we've been suffering a bit recently. I would, however, like to fully agree with what Eileen was saying in the sense that, you know, there are initiatives which are going on by IBM at a corporate level, which are very important. But if you actually look at the individuals who, and, you know, Eileen mentioned a couple of people who are absolute champions in this area. Mm-hmm. But, of course, there are many more people than that who really do give to the community a tremendous amount. But it's hard. It's hard because dealing with an organization the size of IBM, realistically, whatever the goodwill of the individual IBMers may be, it is actually very hard to deal with an organization the size of IBM. And it takes time for it to move and to react. And, you know, you feel the frustration of many of the people that we deal with, the individuals within the organization, that things don't happen at a faster rate or in a slightly different direction or whatever it may be, would be relevant in that area. So, you know, we have an uphill battle because of this whole credibility side. So I think, you know, talking about the positioning, talking about the marketing, the advertising, the et cetera, et cetera, I still think that that's an important thing to be going on within the community.
Actually, that references directly a blog post chain that's going on at the moment about marketing. And I think Paul Mooney kicked into it.
Correct.
To reference some of the work that Darren Adams has done as well.
Absolutely.
Well, Darren. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say Darren would be one of the people who I would put out there with people like Mary Beth and
exactly.
You know,
yeah.
I don't want to keep naming people because I'll be leaving people out. But yeah. I think we all know who they are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, agreed.
And I would definitely echo that in that there's a number of key individuals that are really trying their very hardest. I put Ed Brill, in that category that nobody could fault his effort and his commitment to improving. I think, my blog post goes back to perception of, IBM's focus on what was Lotus in terms of its focus on regaining the kind of high ground in the marketplace that perhaps it's lost because of some of that kind of negative competition that we've had from other people. And as ISVs, that must almost impact your business in a even bigger way than it does for perhaps Darren and I as partners, because if IBM doesn't have those customers out there using Lotus technology, then you won't have the sales for your products, and therefore it must be tremendously challenging for you to kind of keep those relationships with IBM going and kind of keep abreast of where they're going with some of their marketing and some of their product development in terms of making sure you stay current with your products.
From a product perspective, again, we've had huge cooperation from the product managers in that perspective, and interactions and accessibility, which has been very much welcome. But likewise as well from a marketing perspective, in terms of predominantly with product development, but it can be confusing sometimes to keep up with everything. I know, Stuart, you're an average Twitterer.
Indeed.
Exactly. And I just find it information overload. It's fantastic, but it's just information overload because there's so many ways of keeping up. Like, you can keep up with everything that's going on Twitter. You've got this Facebook page, that Facebook page. It's like the ultimate social interaction. We still have business partner information coming in via email, trying to keep up with all of the blog posts and sort out the relevance. There is a huge amount of information out there, both in a formal capacity, i.e. along the business partner formal line, and also the informal via Twitter, Facebook, blog posts, etc., etc. And it is difficult to keep up. And also to sort out what is critical to you and relevant to you versus finding out afterwards. I do find that a major challenge from a product development perspective, because you can't do everything. And especially seeing as we focus on the collaboration portfolio and we've got multiple different Lotus products that we monitor, it's a question of, well, what do we focus on? What do we prioritize? So sorting out what is the next best thing, and it can be very challenging.
Let me step back a bit to what John was saying about a lack of direction, maybe from IBM. My point of view here is IBM have just as much to blame here than their competitors attacking them, because since about ASICS, IBM sat on their hands and didn't react to any statements. And you know, as an analogy, there's a rather famous person in the United States called Barack Obama, who yesterday pulled out his birth certificate because for the past 3 years there has been FUD, for want of a better word, saying he wasn't a US citizen. And the pressure of negative press, despite if it's true or false, and in both cases it's false, if you don't do anything, it continues to be, like Stuart said, a perception which in turn turns into a belief. And if IBM continued to do nothing, and Lotus Notes looked like it was going to be something, but it turns out it was actually more of a flash in the pan. But if IBM continued to do nothing about this and sit on their hands and don't respond to this, then they've really got no one else to blame but themselves. And the fact that they neglected the product for so long, I think, is going to take a lot of time to repair the damage.
So do you think getting rid of the Lotus brand, or are we veering into actually, let's say, getting rid of the branding issue where it's being absorbed into IBM social business tools versus the actual Lotus branding? Do you think that's a good thing?
So I think as a whole, it's no secret that the Lotus word stops a lot more sales than it creates. Having said that, I think there is value in a brand, and there is value in a name. You can turn it around. Hyundai used to be synonymous with cheap crap cars, and it took them 15 years, but last year they won Car of the Year at the Detroit Auto Show. So you can turn a brand around. It just takes a lot of time and a lot of money, both of which I don't think IBM want to invest, because they've got quarterly numbers they have to hit. So, and if it's not going to pay dividends in that side of 12 weeks, then they're not going to really do a lot with it. And so they're not going to spend any money outside of advertising on maybe the Smarter Planet, which I have no idea what that is. But the moment you change the name, you are going to cause yourself, at least in the short to midterm, just as many problems as you're hoping to fix. And my guess is that the Get Social Roadshows, the event formerly known as Lotusphere Comes to You, my guess, and I haven't heard this publicly, but I've heard a few people who have attended them, are in the realm of woefully attended this year. And my guess is because they changed the name. So people are getting emails like, what's this foo-do? I'm not going to that crap. Because they've changed the name. And now you're going to have to start again to build the perception around something else. So you're going to have to spend the money and the time somewhere, or else all of this is for naught.
But on that point,
I
was just going to say, I mean, this is also partly, Darren, the same sort of argument with the product name changes that have happened on a regular basis over the years.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same sort of problem.
And I don't think there's anything intrinsically wrong with changing a product or a brand if you do it in the right way. You know, there's been loads of situations in the past where other brands and other industries have changed, but they typically, if they're done successfully, they're accompanied by a big splurge of marketing and advertising and communication to make sure that change is done properly and make sure the reasons for that change are well understood. I don't think it's been done very well in this case because it's been done so kind of silently and without ever being vocalised by anybody. Even at Lotusphere, it wasn't clearly stated that was what was happening.
Yeah, I think doing that... well, you just have to throw a lot of money at it. And the example I like to throw out is Essentia, right? Arthur Anderson were not a dog turd on anyone's shoe after the Enron scandal. They changed their name, they hired Tiger Woods, and until Tiger Woods caused his own problems, but up until that point, you know, Accenture took off again, and they threw an awful lot of money at the rebranding, and no one today equates Accenture with Arthur Anderson on any level. So it can be done, and that's the quick way to do it, is change your name, throw a ton of money at it. The Hyundai example is a different way.
Yeah. But do you think that the brand, the Lotus brand, is... We'll get back to John's original topic, because it's about the perception and the perception out there. So changing it to IBM Social Business instead of collaboration tools, will that improve that perception?
I think adding the name IBM to everything gives it credence in the Fortune 500 or the Global 1000. I think for my normal customer that is, you know, 500 person or less, they really don't give a rat's ass if it's Lotus or whether it's IBM. So my guess is here, it's really to change the perception of the Fortune 1000. And I think it all goes back to a services play, because if I can't sell, let's say, Lotus Connections into, you know, XYZ Megacorp because it has the word Lotus in it, I lose a lot of revenue in sales and seats. But IBM ISSL probably lose a boatload, probably in the realm of 5 to 7 times more in services. So by removing the name and squishing it together, that gives my sales force, if I were to have one, which is a different conversation, it gives my sales force now the option to go in and sell a product that is maybe not going to get cut down by the first person that says, oh, isn't that, I used Lotus Notes 4.6 at my old organization and it sucked. Or it gets away from that conversation. So I think it's a pure money play. And I think the likes of Mike Roden are dressing this up as a sheep that's not really what they say it is, which is, oh, it's got multiple products in, so that's why we're calling it that. That's sort of tosh. But it's going to be difficult either way. But the problem is IBM sat on their hands for like at least half a decade, maybe even a decade, and ignored all of the hand grenades that the likes of Microsoft and Oracle were throwing this way. And so when you ignore or don't respond for that amount of time, it becomes an urban myth. And it's true. It doesn't matter what you prove to me, I'm going to believe it's true. And I think that's the reason why at some point they have to rebrand it or spend an awful lot of money, you know, pumping into the brand. And I think the Lotus Notes campaign, I don't think there was a lot of money there. I think there's a lot less money there than everyone thought. But I think they looked at the change in perception numbers and thought, you know what, there's no point to rule this out worldwide. Let's just do something else. And I think they give up midway through.
That's certainly my belief of what happened, because, you know, even in the UK, which is one of the 3 or 4 major countries for Lotus Notes, it was, you know, flash in the pan. It was Wimbledon. It was during the World Cup. And then there's been nothing since. So, and of course, you have to question the logic of having a big campaign the year before you change the brand. So I guess it wasn't terribly joined up thinking in terms of that rebranding following that campaign.
12 weeks, baby. 12 weeks.
So, Eileen and John, I mean, whatever we think of that rebranding, whatever we think of IBM's management of the Lotus portfolio, your companies are both committed to it as an ISV. Is there anything that IBM could do to make it easier to partner with them, to make it easier for ISVs to come on board? You know, if there was a startup developing some kind of tool that, you know, that what would convince them to do it on Lotus? What could IBM do to make being an ISV for IBM Lotus more appealing than it currently is today?
Do you want to take that, Eileen, or...?
Yeah, sure, I can start off. I think the size of the organization can be very confusing. And so I think just to make it easy is instead for a brand, let's say you get a brand new partner coming onboarding at the moment. I've been in this industry for so long now at this stage that I know it, but it can be very, very daunting to try, if you're coming on board, to try and work out who does what, who to talk to, where to go to get information, and the sources of information. So maybe if you're onboarding a new business partner, having a single point of contact for that, global, so that you don't have one in one region, another in another region, etc., etc., because we're a global organization as well, and I found it a bit difficult if I'm in one region, it's a very disparate organization. So even within IBM, it's done differently in the UK than it is in France, than it is in Geneva, etc. But as I said, and it's like the fangirl here, in terms of the accessibility has been fantastic. And the interactions as well at the logs has been absolutely excellent. And being able to, the fact that IBM sent Meet the Developers to the logs from a business partner perspective is fantastic, because you don't have to go to Lotusphere where you go into the forum and meet the developer labs. You can actually interact and meet with them, and it gives you access to very, very technical people, and you get an awful lot of problems solved exceptionally quickly. So that would just be, sometimes I can find it a bit confusing with not only the different business layers of IBM, but also sometimes the different geographical contacts. Okay.
On the issue of accessibility, I would absolutely agree with Eileen. If you actually look at the sort of level of people who are made accessible by IBM at these lugs, we're talking about, you know, absolutely the top people in the company in their particular sphere. So for an ISV, it's actually pretty easy to get in touch with the right people from at that sort of fairly high level. I think the problem that we have, and here I'm speaking specifically on the Integra for Notes experience that we have, our particular product really enhances the value of notes within an organization. Because Notes has always had a problem in terms of never addressing the issue of reporting, charting, analysis, whatever it may be, what we actually do is we bring to the party improvements to customers' experience so that they're actually getting their data in a format which is better presented, looks sexier, so to speak, and therefore enhances the value that people are getting out of their Notes environment. So really what very often happens is that we tend to make Notes more sticky within an organization. Because there may be people within an organization saying, these views don't look great, I don't get the data the way I want it, et cetera, et cetera. And we can alleviate that problem for the organization and therefore for the end user. And as a result, it tends to improve the end user's experience using Notes, and particularly specific Notes applications. So Notes is more likely to be retained within an organization. However, if you actually speak to an IBM sales rep, because of the way they are compensated, they actually have no interest, realistically, in keeping the product in there, because they are compensated based on new licenses or new services that they're selling into a customer, rather than retention of revenue. There are some experience. There are some exceptions. So you know, sort of, we do deal with some IBM sales rep reps who are actually saying, well, my customer can benefit, so let me get you in front of my customer, rather than saying, I'm not going to make any money out of this, therefore, you know, I'm just going to be looking elsewhere. And this is actually a problem, which is maybe more specific to us because we sell to the installed base. But in terms of if you say, what can IBM do to help us as an ISV, it's actually trying to address this issue. And it's very difficult for me to say, and the way to address it is this way. But certainly it's something to do with compensation. Compensation based on retention of revenue is actually also very, very important, rather than just trying to build new customers and new licenses into an organization. So I think if IBM were in a position to improve the stickiness of notes within an organization through its sales reps, I think that would help the industry in general.
It's an excellent point, Joe.
I completely and utterly agree. It is unfathomable that an IBM, a Lotus sales rep, because the Lotus sales reps don't get comped on renewals, but some of the IBM client reps do. It's really confusing. IBM needs to give a matrix to a partner so they know exactly who they've got to put her up. But the long and the short of it is, you know, I don't know if there's a belief out there that, oh, well, if they move, then I can sell them notes net new again and get them back on a what we call a D SKU as opposed to an E SKU, which is renewal. And there just seems to be an innate ability to not really give a rat's ass about whether a company stays on their product or not. And it's not rocket science here, but it costs 10 times more or 5 times more to get a new client than it does to keep an existing one. So, you know, instead of seeing all of these move stories that Google and Microsoft like to publish, but IBM never liked to publish for some obscure reason, you know, why not funnel some resources into keeping them on there and don't just comp the renewal reps, because the renewal reps are like Rottweilers. They go after the customers for any little thing. You know, there's got to be a whole hard look. I agree with John. There's got to be a complete look at how these set of products are sold, because the same thing's going to happen in 3 to 5 years for connections and quicker and whatever the product du jour is even then.
And actually, even if the focus is on these new products, you're far more likely to sell them into existing customers if you've looked after the customer, you know, made sure they're on their renewals, made sure you're offering them value throughout the lifetime of the products they use, rather than just selling them something, you know, at the end of fourth quarter and then disappearing for a year. So I think, you know, even where IBM's focus is on selling new stuff, I think they've got to compensate people for actually keeping the customers happy one way or another.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So just a very, very quick question to finish off this topic. A topic du jour that we had kind of before Christmas, I guess it was, 2010, we talked about app stores an awful lot and whether that would make a difference to ISVs and application developers. Just very quickly, would it make a difference to either of your companies if there was a sophisticated kind of IBM catalog you could put your products in, or even if there was a real app store that customers could download your products from to run on the Lotus platforms?
Isn't that supposed to be the greenhouse?
Well, there is a catalogue in the greenhouse, yeah, but it's not terribly well done, I would say. But, you know, would you see any impact on your business if they did it better or did it differently?
Well, obviously, if there was a catalogue out there that was well advertised, that was distributed to IBM customers, so an IBM customer would say, okay, I need a monitoring and reporting tool or a standard service request tool. Oh, look, GSX has them. Obviously.
But surely the catalogue does that, Eileen. I mean, I think when you look at an app store is not just a catalogue, is it? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a way of presenting a very smooth way to purchase a particular product. And you know, we're all familiar with the app stores out there, particularly the Apple one, which is really about convenience.
Yeah. No, I think there's two aspects to it. One is, as Stuart said, the catalogue is kind of hidden in the greenhouse. So you have to log in to get it, and it's not a lot of people know about it, unless it's just me. I get the impression that not a lot of people know about it.
It's not just you.
Okay, so that's what I meant there, John, was that if it was if it was well known,
more visible,
more visible, more accessible, yes, obviously it would be a huge benefit, because it's another way of getting your product name out there and getting more exposure to what your product actually does. Likewise, App Store, obviously, if it's easier for customers to locate and purchase your product and it's profitable for you, yes, definitely, the easier the better.
I mean, I was just going to mention that the trouble with the App Store approach is it's appropriate, I think, for certain types of products and possibly less appropriate for others. So, for instance, it's probably more appropriate for our type of products than it would be for the GSX product range, I would suspect, because there is a certain amount of complexity involved in the wholesale process and the positioning. It's, you know, you're not buying a little tool to do something fairly minor. This is quite a major decision, not just in terms of investment, but also the choices that you're making going down for one tool rather than another. And I think the whole App Store approach, people have got used to, you know, buying products for a couple of dollars type of approach with an App Store, which in itself is not so appropriate for most of the products that I think are out there as ISV products for the Notes environment.
I would say, yeah, I know you have a very valid point. I think as an introduction to a product, if somebody wants to go out and, let's say, locate and get a trial, it's a great way of doing it. But the more engaged, then you would have to have an engagement in terms of a decision criteria from a company, et cetera, regarding their infrastructure. What are the various components? So you actually have a valid point there about the point of purchase. If there's an app store out there where it makes it very, very easy to locate and download a product for trial purposes, agreed.
But so then just for giggles. Oh, sorry, yeah. Aline, go ahead.
No, carry on.
Just for giggles, I just Googled Lotus App Store, and the first post that looks like it points to the catalog on Greenhouse is 1.5 pages in, and is actually a blog post that references this podcast.
Okay.
Definitely so, could be better communicated then.
I'm on the page 3 and I still don't see any actual greenhouse.lotus.com, and it may be because it's secure, it can't be crawled by Google, which, you know, if I can't find an app store, does an app store really exist, right? It's the whole tree in the woods kind of idea again.
Sure.
Oh well, we'll keep on pressing for this and asking people, and we'll see whether IBM ever take us up on it. I think there's definitely a requirement, even if it's not particularly well kind of described at the moment. So let's rattle on through the news of the week. We'll do this and then get on to our tips. First of all, a couple of Research in Motion RIM stories this week. First of all, they acquired Tungle, which is a service that I've used an awful lot since, I guess, Lotusphere last year when it was really announced for Notes. It's a service for calendaring and scheduling with people outside your organization. Darren, did you see the story? Do you think, can you make any sense of why RIM are buying this product?
I tweeted yesterday that every time I see a RIM announcement, I kind of think WTF. And then I kind of move on. I don't know what they're thinking. I don't know what they're doing. You know, you're reading the review of the playbooks and they're just getting hammered all over creation. And they bought Gist, right? They've now bought Tungle. I'm still not quite sure what Gist does, and I'm still not sure how or what RIM are thinking by integrating these products. The only thing I can think of is they're trying to buy an ultra cool platform.
And Eileen, you partner with RIM. You got any feel for where they're going with this stuff? Is it just about the cool factor, about getting the you know, Generation Y on board, or do you see them fitting some of these services they're buying into the BlackBerry platform?
I think it's very interesting. I could extrapolate out that it's more in terms of the importance of calendaring and. If you get into the entire collaboration platform, and the accessibility of calendaring and email. Calendaring was always just an add-on to your email. But what I'm noticing, maybe it's just my lifestyle, but what I'm noticing more and more with people is calendaring is becoming an application in itself, not just as a nice add-on to your email. And the criticality of calendaring interaction and availability is becoming much more, well, critical. So where they're going to take this, I don't know. But I do think it's very, very interesting because I've had this discussion recently that calendaring is becoming an application in itself, not just as an add-on to email. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see where they run with this one.
And I think that's very relevant. I think an awful lot of folks, even if they're not in traditional work environments, are beginning to need, you know, calendaring and scheduling just to share stuff amongst their families, amongst their kids, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, there's all sorts of ways in which they can bring this together. So it'll be interesting to watch it as we go forward.
It could be the killer app. You know, the expression that was raised, the 80s expression, the killer app that everybody simply has to have. So if they can crack this, it'll be interesting.
Well, remember, RIM have already done a Home Bez that you installed on the PC and everyone's biz account could connect to it and sync calendars and stuff. So they've already been down that, been on swing two before the strikeout now.
We've already mentioned UK Lug this episode. There's a couple of user groups that have been announced in the last week or so. We've got I Am Lug coming up for, I think it's probably the third year of I Am Lug, I think, which is 1st and 2nd of August. They've also got a Tack It On session on the 3rd of August, which is a paid event with some training and stuff going on. There's also MW Lug, which is coming up in Milwaukee 24th, 26th of August. Do you see yourselves going to either of those events, guys?
We're supporting UK Lug again this year, as we've done for the last few years. So going there, we're going to be supporting financially I Am Lug, but we may or may not have an actual presence there. Timing's not very great for us. Us Mediterranean people in August.
Far more fun things to be doing.
It's business critical.
So bear me on this one, Eileen.
Yeah, it's business critical time of year, isn't it, John?
Of course.
Yeah.
So let me get this right. Malta in August or St. Louis in August?
Yeah.
Yes, I know which one I would pick.
Yeah. I'm going to be in St. Louis in August. GSX are supporting I Am Lug, and we're also supporting Pack Lug as well, actually, which is coming up in June. Yep. So, I'm actually going to be at both. Excellent. As well. So looking forward to both, and looking forward, this will be the third year now as well for St. Louis. So the I Am Lug is always a very good gig.
There's so. Also Aussie Lug seems to be rearing its head. 22nd August, if I remember rightly.
Down in Sydney. 22nd of August, is it? They were talking about early September.
Yeah, they're now, in fact, again, date's not good for us, but 22nd September is the 22nd August is the date I last heard.
Okay.
I think both Darren and I are trying to find business justification for being out at Auslug. There must be a way. Just have to work it out.
Yeah.
And just to finish us off, a good friend of yours, I think, Eileen, Steve McDonough, has announced today a little tool on his blog, which is for graphing mail.box usage, which I certainly could have done with about 5 years ago when I was admining a fairly large Lotus environment. So that's a good tool. There's a link in the show notes if anybody's interested in that. And lastly, Symbian announced today they're going to transfer, are going to transfer the Symbian software support out to Accenture. Darren, you mentioned Accenture earlier. The strategy of Nokia, particularly after Stephen Elop joined from Microsoft, seems very strange right now. But I guess this is their kind of natural response to taking on Microsoft Phone 7, is that they're going to have to shift Symbian off to somebody else.
Well, I think it looks like, you know, they've got some legs in Symbian, and obviously they don't want the cost associated with that. So I think they're transferring it out and are probably giving Accenture a big chunk of money. It's probably less than keeping 5,000 developers on staff.
Yeah, so
it's normal outsourcing, right? Okay, I'm getting rid of that. Let me outsource it. I'm going to sell all my developers. I'm going to fire them. You can go work for Accenture for 75% of the cost. Bye-bye. Have fun. We're now Windows Mobile 7, and we're now Nokia joined RIM in the completely insane mobile company.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how the Nokia thing maps out. I think it's just completely unfathomable from where I stand right now.
How many RIM shares do you have, Darren?
None.
You've been fairly outspoken on RIM since the start of this podcast, Darren, so I'd have been shocked if you said yes to that to that question. Okay, on to our tips. We always ask our panelists to come up with a tip that they can share with you, the listener. It might be a site, a product, a feature, or something that they can recommend you take a look at. So, Darren, kick us off as usual. What's your tip for this time?
So, I have a lot of servers around the planet, and they all have different numbers of minutes on them. And when domain controllers get out of sync, you have trouble logging on. So we looked at the interwebs for an NTP server, the Network Time Protocol servers, and I found a site, pool.ntp.org, in the show notes. And this is a pool of location-based NTP servers. So there's some in Europe, there's some in America, there's some in literally every continent has at least 50 servers. And we just build little small Linux servers. We set that Linux server up to hit the pool. That synchronizes the time, and then we just synchronize the Windows servers with our little Linux server, and now all of our time issues are resolved. Beautiful service, free, very, very, very recommended.
Sounds excellent. Wonderful. Thank you for that, Darren. And Eileen, what's your tip?
My tip actually is where technology invades my personal life. And I do a lot of walking, hiking, swimming, and I have two little applications that integrate all together on my iPhone, which is a Withing scale. It's a scale that feeds via Wi-Fi to an application on my phone. So, but this also integrates with Runkeeper, which is also on my iPhone. So it tracks all my hikes, my runs, et cetera, et cetera. It gives me the breakdown. Because it's integrated with my scale, it also gives me estimates of calories burned, fitness levels, et cetera, et cetera. So this is where gradually over a period of time, my iPhone actually became an integral part of my health and fitness regime. So
does it tell you when your knees are about to blow out?
No, it didn't, but it was tracking me hobbling down the mountain with
Your average speed has just dropped 0.5 miles an hour.
My average speed decreased dramatically once my knees get on top of a mountain.
And the Withing scales aren't particularly cheap, are they? About £120 in the UK. Would you say it's worth that expenditure to get that Wi-Fi functionality?
If you're into your IT and you're into your fitness, yes. Because it does give you an awful lot of feedback on your progress and on how hard you're actually working. And it also, the guilt factor, when you see it automatically graphed on your phone, it's the, you know, and then you start to see the graph going the wrong way and it's like, oh my Lord, I got to change that. It has to go down. So, yes, I think it's worth, if you're into that and into your fitness, then it's definitely worth it. I know a few people who are in the IT industry who have them and they become just addictive.
Sounds a bit worrying to me. Okay, thank you for the tip. That's a really good one. And John, what's your tip?
My tip's much more useful than Darren's, I think. Mine is a robot lawnmower. Controllable.
Excellent.
Via your iPhone. So this has just been announced, so it's not available yet, but you know, watch this space. Again, there's a link to it in the show notes. It's a GPS equipped robotic lawnmower that you can control from your iPhone, including when you're not at home, so it doesn't have to be actually, you know, it's not a Bluetooth
what
type.
What could possibly go wrong? Next up, robot chainsaw.
And of course, what you can do is you can keep track of where it is, probably Runkeeper integration, maybe Eileen too, and start off your lawn before you get home.
There is
a downside.
Oh, go ahead.
Now, the downside is they're talking about a price range of about $5,000. So you've got to really have a, you know, important enough lawn for you to justify this.
I'm wondering how it empties itself as well. Where do you reckon it dumps all the grass trimmings? That's going to be
on your neighbour's patch, I think.
So what you do is you actually integrate RunKeeper and this robot lawnmower. And if the robot lawnmower sees you not doing enough exercise, it comes after you.
Can also see how fast the lawnmower is going and how many calories.
I tell you what, I just put my iPhone onto your lawnmower. We'll both sit down with a beer and watch it.
Much more appealing. Excellent. Thank you, John. Thanks for that. I'll look out for it being released at some stage. My tip is something actually I saw on another podcast this week and have acquired one myself, which is an origami workstation, which is a fabulous product name. It's basically a case for an Apple Bluetooth keyboard. I think, well, what use is that? Well, a lot of people carry iPads. It's nice to have a proper keyboard for it once in a while, particularly while, you know, writing long blog posts or, you know, reports or whatever. And so it's good to carry around the Bluetooth keyboard as well. It's pretty small, fits in your bag. But the problem is, it's, you know, it's a bit of a worry that the keys are going to get knocked off or bashed or whatever. So this is a really nice little case for your keyboard. But the neat thing is it folds out and then doubles as a stand for the iPad, which means that then you can sit with the iPad at an angle in front of you, the keyboard in front of it. You're ready to go to write your blog posts, your articles, whatever. It's about $29. It's about £20, I think, in the UK. So pretty good value, really nice case, well worth having a look at. I've got mine on order. I'll let you know how it goes in future weeks. So the link again will be in the show notes for that. Not nearly as fun as yours. Sorry, guys.
They need to make it look like a Jack Bauer man purse, and then they'll sell tons of it.
Oh, we'll have to suggest that to the makers. But there's a link in the show notes with a photo and that it folds up in a really neat way to hold your iPad.
It looks cool. Does the iPad actually connect to the keyboard then?
No, it doesn't. It just does everything through Bluetooth.
Okay, because it looks like it's kind of linked, doesn't it? But I guess not. I guess it's just a keyboard.
It just sits there behind the keyboard against the holder. So it works really well from what I've seen. So that's my tip for this week. I'd like to thank you all for taking part in the podcast. Eileen, do you want to kick us off? How do people track you down if they want to ask you a question afterwards or find out more about the products?
Certainly. You can go to gsx.com. My blog, EileenFitzy.com, which does tend to go more into hill walking, or Twitter. My Twitter is EileenFitzy.
Awesome.
So any of those, you can get back to me on any of those methods.
Lovely. Well, thanks for taking part today, Eileen. Look forward to seeing you at UK Lug.
Thank you very much. Looking forward to it as well.
Excellent. And John, how do people find you?
Well, you can get hold of us at IntegraForNotes.com. That's Integra4Notes.com.
Okay.
You can get me there at jdg@integraphonotes.com. So those are probably the two best ways. I'm not a twit, so you're not going to find me there.
Excellent. Well, thanks again for taking part today, John. Really appreciated your input.
You're welcome. Good to see you all next month.
Indeed. And Darren, how do people find you?
First things first, Auslug is the 25th and 26th of August in Sydney.
Okay.
Second quick thing, Stuart, that was a series of 7 blog posts, and I'm sure you never did all 7. You promised the world 7 blog posts, and you never delivered. I think you got the 4, and then you give up.
Guilty as charged. I keep on thinking about writing them, think it's so irrelevant. Like, it was so long ago. Maybe I'll have to get back to them.
And I forgot what the question was. Oh, blog.darrenduke.net for all things technically related, although I usually tell you them now in my tip section, so my blog's kind of going downhill rather quickly. And for my 140-character rants, usually against Rim these days, it's Darren Duke, all one word.
Excellent. Thank you, Darren. And I'm Stuart McIntyre. You can find me at my blog at blog.collaborationmatters.com or on Twitter, Stuart McIntyre. Finally, as well, we have a giveaway. We have a copy of Michael Sampson's great book on user adoption strategies. He gave me that while I was in London recently. If you'd like to get hold of that, simply blog about This Week in Lotus, linking to our site. We'll pick one of those posts at random and send a copy of the book to the winner. So if you can do that this week, we'll get it to you next week. So again, thanks to everybody for taking part. I hope you've enjoyed the podcast. And till next week, this was This Week in Lotus. Bye.
All opinions expressed during this podcast are those of the participants only and do not necessarily represent those of their employer.
This Week in Lotus is sponsored by Audible, the destination for the widest selection of digital audiobooks available worldwide. Want to be well read like Duffbutt, but just can't spare the time to read books on paper? Take an audiobook on your commute or whilst walking instead. We've got a special offer for you. Download and listen to a best-selling book every month for just $7.49 a month for the first 3 months, and you can cancel at any time. Pick from over 85,000 audiobooks from business to classics to sci-fi or comedy. Go to thisweekinlotus.com/audible for all the details.